This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
For daily content, follow Bartholomew Town on Instagram and TikTok. Neil Mehta is the editor-in-chief and president of the Brown Daily Herald, and the Herald has been, in many ways, the leading news outlet when it comes to the Brown University Solidarity Encampment. We've been providing coverage as best as we can here on Bartholomew Town with interviews with organizers and spokespeople. And really, when you look at it as a split screen between what took place yesterday at Brown and what took place in New York, and I would recommend anyone listen to the interview I just did with independent journalist Katie Smith, who was on the ground last night in New York, you couldn't have more of a contrast. Neil, take us through what took place yesterday that led to the dismantlement of the Brown Solidarity Encampment.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me. Yesterday, demonstrators had been rallying on the main green, which is the lawn at the heart of campus, calling on Brown to divest from roughly a dozen companies with certain ties to Israel. During the day, a small group of representatives had been inside the university's main administrative building multiple times, negotiating with a small group of administrators. They had been expressing their desire for Brown to not only divest from those companies that it identified, but also to drop charges against a group of students who were arrested at a previous protest. After some back and forth between the admin and the students, at around 1 p.m., everyone signed on to an agreement saying that the university's highest governing body would vote on a divestment resolution sometime in October. Interestingly, though, that agreement didn't say anything about the charges for these 41 students, which are still ongoing.
Yes, that was one of the two initial demands of those who were encamped on the main lawn, was for those charges to be dropped. It doesn't seem like that was something the university was willing to entertain, citing policy, so on and so forth, even in spite of the city council president, sort of in an unusual, at minimum, move, putting out a statement calling for careful assessment of those charges. From your perspective as a journalist covering this phenomenon, was this a victory for the Solidarity Encampment?
Well, I definitely think it was a win for the demonstrators in the sense that they have been pushing for the university's governing body to vote on this resolution, and they did get that demand through. It's hard to say whether the university was ever willing to drop charges against these students, which was that second demand. The university has been pretty firm in saying that the students should accept the charges as a consequence of public civil disobedience. Although the university has also been very firm in not bringing this divestment resolution to the corporation.
Yes, no doubt that this is, in some ways, regardless of the outcome of the vote, which will ultimately take place later in the calendar year, this was a somewhat unprecedented move. Now, there certainly have been polling conducted by your own outlet and others, and anecdotal polling, if you will, that has shown in the past, even going back to 2019 and before, that there was movement and a desire for divestment. How does this differ from previous efforts for Brown University to divest?
Definitely. Well, in one sense, this is taking place at so many campuses across the country. If I were a college president right now and my campus had an encampment like so many college presidents do, I'm sure that I would want to stay out of the headlines and avoid escalating. So in that sense, I'm sure that the fact that these college protests are happening across the country is a factor that changes things. Another big difference here is that the scale of the protest is very much unlike what has happened on Brown's campus before with regard to divestment from Israel. There have been protests with hundreds of people, but an encampment on the main green, people hanging around for days and days, is definitely something unusual compared to the protests back in 2020 and afterward.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about it. Definitely a different scale. Also a different scale from that which has taken place on other campuses, whether you're talking Columbia City College, sort of what I've been framing as the Pan-NYC protest, UCLA. It was always a different flavor from what I gathered, and it never, ever got to a point that I could see where it seemed likely that law enforcement was going to storm the encampment. It felt like there was an inevitability to some sort of quasi-productive outcome. Would you agree with that assessment?
I wasn't entirely sure about the outcome at the start, because this memory of the university arresting roughly 61 demonstrators back in December is still very fresh. But the difference between those demonstrators and these ones is that those demonstrators were trespassing in a university building, while at the outset of this encampment, our university's president made clear that encampment itself is not an arrestable offense. Whether there was going to be some kind of escalation was yet to be seen. But in the days leading up to the final agreement, it became increasingly clear that there was some kind of constructive dialogue.
And that dialogue, it's being portrayed as a victory by those demonstrators in many ways, that this was able to advance to the point where there's any serious discussion about a divestment proposal being brought to the corporation. That's unprecedented in and of itself. Do you get the sense that the agreement will be upheld and that there won't be any further demonstrations of at least a large scale, such as what we saw with the Solidarity encampment, until at least after commencement?
Well, the agreement's language itself is very strong and doesn't really have any cutouts in it. If you look at the language of the agreement, it makes clear that the vote in October will not be postponed for any reason. And it's also very strong in that students will, as soon as possible, clear out the encampment, giving it an actual time deadline as well. That agreement further is posted on the university's website now, so there is the sort of degree of accountability for both of these parties now that anyone can see what everyone has agreed to. So for that reason, I'm leaning toward the fact that these terms may just end up being agreed to because they are so public and they are so clear in what they're saying.
Mm-hmm. One thing I noted was in President Paxson's statement, which was pretty lengthy and actually kind of in different formats. There's a shorter version and there's a longer version. She did reference and use the words, in quotes, but certainly use the words, genocide in Gaza. Was that a negotiated piece that the president would, at least in some ways, if not acknowledge the ongoing genocide, at least frame it as a possibility?
Well, it's hard to say what exactly happened in that room, but there was deliberation about the president's message itself. One of the public agreements is that the president would send out a message at exactly 3 p.m., so even the time of that message was negotiated.
Mm-hmm. Student journalists played a critical role in, as I referenced, the Brown Daily Herald specifically played a critical role. We saw last night unbelievable work by Columbia's student journalists, especially their radio station, which actually was so, the website was visited by so many people that it actually went down at one point. The stream was interrupted, and they were encouraging people to use the FM dial. Number one, as a radio person, I see that as a positive because it shows the power of using the air, FM and AM radio, to get important messages out. But number two, it shows a level of trust. There was a split screen last night between mainstream media's coverage of what was happening in New York and what student and independent journalists were reporting on the ground. Not exactly the same here in Rhode Island and at Brown University, but I got the sense from being at the encampment several times and conducting several interviews that there were some diverging narratives when it came to this. From your standpoint, Did by and large the media in Rhode Island get the story right?
Well, what I will say is that I'm very thankful that the media, both in Rhode Island and a lot of national media, has been not only standing beside student journalists covering this whole protest, but has also been actively platforming student journalists and reaching out to student journalists to help corroborate the story. So for that reason, I am glad that student journalists are being platformed as this this encampment protest was covered.
Last couple of questions here. What's next in your mind from the standpoint of obviously moving towards October and a divestment proposal being voted on by the corporation and an agreement that does seem like it just, again, anecdotally will hold up through at least commencement. But do you imagine that students are so activated, so mobilized that in the event that the divestment proposal is voted down in the fall, that this could kick up again?
Well, divestment, debates around divestment and protests surrounding divestment have been ongoing for years at Brown. Mm-hmm. So at the time in 2020, when the university first decided that it would not bring a divestment proposal forward to the corporation, the student body reacted with quite a bit of activism then as well. So seeing that this activism has been going on for so many years, I would be surprised if it fizzled out very quickly after October.
Last question here. And again, I would recommend everyone add the Brown Daily Herald to their media diet on a daily basis, not only for this story, but in general. What's next for you? What are you? What year are you in? And how do you transition over the years and keep a student run news outlet that is just so incredibly useful and credible? How do you keep moving as a journalist in this space?
Oh, well, I'm so glad you asked. It's something that we're constantly thinking about. We really have two missions at the Herald. One is to inform our community in as thorough of a way as possible and document what it's like to be a student at Brown. But the other is to train the next generation of journalists. So as we move through the semester and through the year, what we're always thinking about is the skills that we can build for writers to become editors and for editors to become newsroom leaders. So in that process, we hope that we can continue to keep serving Providence.
Neil, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your outstanding work on this, and best of luck moving forward.
Thank you so much again for having me.